J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
There was an old farmer who lived by a rock. Sat in the meadow, was shaking his fist at some boys who were down by the creek. Feet in the water, their hands on their marbles and playthings. And in days of yore, they met a young maiden. She looked like a pretty young creature. She sat on the grass, pulled up her dresses to show us her ruffles and laces. With the white fluffy duck, said she was learning a new way to bring up her children and teach them to knit, while the boys in the barnyard were shoveling refuse and litter from yesterday's hunt, while the girl in the meadow was rubbing her eyes at the boys just like girls sometimes do, to make it quite clear that she wanted to go for a nice pleasant stroll on the grass. Hurry back home for a nice piece of ice creamy cake that stood three layers tall. After dessert, she was ready to go for another walk down by the dock. With any young man with a sizable roll of 100s and a big bulge up front, if he'd ask politely, she'd show him her little pet dog that was subject to fits. He'd reach on over, grab hold of her small tender hands with the movement so quick. She'd bend on over and suck on his soda so sweetly till she finished it. Then pull down her panties to rub on her hip that she bruised as she ran down the halls. Cause he tried to force her to lick on his candy so tasty made of butterscotch. And then he spread whipped cream all over her cookies that she had been baking all night. If you think this is dirty, you're f***ing well right.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Friday, January 20th, 2023. Only 26 days now until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida for spring training. How you doing, kids? You are at jcontheline.com. Well, it has not been a good start to the new year. And it's what we've been talking about now for the last couple of years. We're entering into a period of time now where we're going to lose everybody. We're just going to lose everybody. And it's a depressing thought, made even more depressing when you stop to realize that after all they're gone, then it's going to be our turn. And the David Crosby thing, we will deal with a little bit later on in the show. But I'll tell you the story. I'll tell you the setup. I had met Graham Nash a couple of different times. He was sort of the guy designated in Crosby, Stills, Nash, and sometimes Young. He was the guy who would do the majority of the interviews. Not that the other guys didn't, but, you know, Neil Young, first of all, he didn't like anybody. He's such a grumpy old coot. He's been like that since he was in his 20s, you know. Stephen Stills, great to talk to. I had a conversation with him when I was in Houston a couple of years back, and he was really interesting. David Crosby, he didn't really talk. He just didn't talk. He didn't give interviews. So it was Graham Nash. You know, they'd be staying at a downtown hotel or something prior to a concert in St. Louis, and I would call up, and they would set up the interview, and I would go down there, and no entourage, nothing like that. It was the weirdest thing. I still remember this. Once I was interviewing Graham Nash in the lobby of, was it called the Majestic Hotel? I want to say it was a Webby property in downtown. This is many, many years ago. My memory is failing me a little bit. But anyhow, so we do the interview, and all the TV cameras set up and everything like that. And it gives me a terrific interview. And we're breaking down the cameras. Graham Nash goes back to his room, and I turn around, and I'm face-to-face with the guy who used to do those, "Hey, Vern, know what I mean? Know what I mean, Vern?" do those TV commercials? That guy. He did, Laclede Gas, Laclede Gas. And he did those commercials all over the country for different companies, a lot of utilities, some grocery stores. And this, by the way, was at about 11:30 in the morning, and this guy's over at the bar pounding him back, smoking and drinking his brains out. Ernest did not hang around long after that. But I had interviewed Graham Nash a couple of different times, and we had a very nice rapport, and he's just a very, very nice man to talk to. He's just a nice guy. And matter of fact, we've had him on twice just in the last couple of years. He was doing a show somewhere. I forget where it was. It was a solo, and I was trying to get him to do the song Southbound Train because he wasn't really doing it anymore, and it's one of my all-time favorite songs from Graham Nash. And then he talked about the fact that the song Just a Song Before I Go was a dare. He, one of his best friends, he was driving him to the airport, and the friend was like, you know, you think you're such a big star, blah, 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 blah. You know, just blowing him some crap, keeping him grounded. And he basically said, all right, it's a 25-minute drive to the airport. I bet you can't write a song in 25 minutes while we're in the car, while I'm driving you to the airport. And Graham Nash said, oh, really? Okay. And so he wrote the song, Just a Song Before I Go, which turned out, and I was surprised to learn this too, that was the biggest hit they ever had. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, Our House, Southern Cross, all of those really, really, nope, Just a Song Before I Go was the biggest selling song ever. He wrote it in the car on the way to the airport. Now, there was a documentary that came out a couple of years ago where I guess David Crosby was trying to repair his legacy a little bit, trying to do a little surgery. He was a marvelous musician. He was a tremendous singer. He left us with some great songs. He was not always the nicest guy to be around. There's just way, way too many stories about decisions that he made and that were not good in the way he treated people. And the way he portrayed himself, the way he presented himself to people, it was very alienating. And a lot of people in the music business respected him, and they felt bad because they used to like him. And they're like, he's just not doing anything to get in the good graces of people. He just doesn't seem interested in it. So a couple of years ago, like I said, they did this documentary, and it was clearly an attempt for him to sort of repair his image. You know, there was a famous intervention involving Jackson Browne and a couple of other people from the music business where they went to him, and they said, look, you're going to blow up and we don't want to lose you. And I think it was shortly after that is when he got busted. He spent 9 months in a Texas jail on guns and drugs charges. You know, I sort of feel bad because, you know, somebody dies, you're supposed to say nice things about him. And there's just a lot of stuff that doesn't work. Oh, here's CBS here. Let me see something here.
Join Stephen Stills of Buffalo Springfield.
This is Anthony Mason. He does great work for CBS.
In a new super group, Crosby, Stills, and Nash would win the Grammy for Best New Artist. Later, adding Neil Young, they hit the road.
Our second gig was Woodstock.
The song Woodstock would help their album Deja Vu sell 8 million copies. But Crosby's girlfriend, Christine Hinton, had been killed in a car crash.
I was damn near destroyed. I'm just really lucky we were making that record because it gave me a raison d'etre. It gave me a
reason to get up in the morning.
Damn right.
But he began to use heavy drugs and notoriously battled addiction for much of his life. Sailing was Crosby's escape. It inspired perhaps his best-known song. In one of his final tweets, Crosby wrote of heaven. I heard the place is overrated, he said. Cloudy.
Just a song before I go.
David Crosby was 81.
Stephen Stills put out a very moving statement. He said, first, he was deeply saddened, as you can imagine, and that Crosby's harmonic sensibilities were nothing short of genius. David Crosby was famous famously candid, and it meant he often butted head with his bandmates, Stills included. Mm. Graham Nash, who he was actually estranged from at the end, also talked about the profound sadness and said David was fearless in life and in music.
So many of those songs are so iconic with Turn, Turn, Turn.
Yeah, all the way back to the Birds. It was, I think one of the things that was really shocking about it, particularly for me, was that Crosby was still, he was very active on Twitter right up until just days ago.
Yeah.
So he seemed really present. So a lot of people were really shocked by this news.
Yeah. It is sad, but when this happens, we look back and realize that certain artists had their fingerprints
yes.
on certain decades.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When you look at Crosby, we're talking about multiple.
Yeah.
To be part of those two bands, which yes. literally changed music.
Deja Vu is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Great.
Our House, oh, it's so beautiful.
Yep.
Here you go. We will wrap up today's podcast with an interview you're going to really enjoy because it's all three guys. And this was in 1990. And they sort of had an awakening and they decided that, you know, the barefoot blue jeans sort of aging hippie thing wasn't really working anymore as the 1980s, you'll recall, if you were here for it, and I'm assuming you were, was very freewheeling and indulgent and people were just, you know, it was just like, whee, here come the 80s. And so they figured, well, it's probably time to get with the times. And their music videos suddenly were of them like in limousines drinking champagne in the back seat. And that lasted about a year. And they realized how embarrassing that looked. And they dropped that and went back to the old ways and everybody was happy again. So this was right during that period of time. And as you'll hear, Stephen Stills has quite almost all of his family members live in Southern Illinois. Even though he was born and raised in Houston, he has a lot of relatives around Lake Carlisle. I always forget, is it Lake Carlisle, Carlisle Lake? I've been in St. Louis almost 40 years, and I can never remember whether the lake comes first or the Carlisle comes first. So anyhow, we'll wrap up today's podcast with what I think is a very, very entertaining conversation. You'll hear the guys interacting when things were better between and among the members of Crosby, Stills, and Nash. But again, David Crosby and his mates changed my life because I've told this story before. I had one of those Panasonic, it wasn't a boombox. It was a regular sort of, at that time, standard radio sized thing, but it had a cassette player and recorder in it. And you could push, you know, two buttons, play and record together. And you could record what was ever coming out of the radio. And this changed my life because I got it for Christmas back in the late 60s. And man, I just ran that thing like 18 hours a day until the transistors just burned out. Man, did I love that machine. I took it with me everywhere and it played cassettes, it recorded cassettes. And I thought it was really, really cool. But then Christmas of 69, my sister gave me, and she's 5 years older than me and always had a very, very heavy influence on me, especially when it came to things like culture and music and things like that. And I've talked about how she turned me on to the Joni Mitchell Blue album in the early 70s. But prior to that, like I said, Christmas of 69, she gave me two store-bought cassettes. In other words, you can record stuff off the radio and play it. It sounded fine, but she gave me Chicago Transit Authority and Deja Vu. And you put that cassette into the machine, the store-bought ones, the manufactured ones, and the sound was incredible. Just incredible. And both of those albums happened to have, oh, how do you even describe the stuff that was on those two albums? The CTA album had, you know, Beginnings and 25, well, it didn't have 25 or 64, that was later. It's a song I'm thinking of, does anybody really know what time it is? With that big, long piano solo that kicks the thing off. And so I'm listening to this going, whoa. So it hit me on two levels. I mean, on one level, it was like the clarity was astonishing, but the songs were amazing too. And then, of course, Deja Vu with, you know, you could drop the needle, as they used to say back in the day. You could drop the needle on any track, and you would hear a song that was good enough to be a single. And that's when I really made a left turn from top 40 radio into more FM-oriented stuff. And it just absolutely changed my life. So I always think of CTA and Deja Vu is the two albums that really were pivotal in terms of my music awakening, I guess you would say. So we'll do that. We'll do that at the end of the podcast, and I think you will enjoy it. All right, Blues win last night. It's good to see them winning a few more games than losing as much as they were the first half of the season, and we're getting closer and closer to a playoff spot now. Let me just say one more. I'm not a lawyer, and this is going to be a very, very complicated case. Extraordinarily complicated. I mean, you could even see, watch all the pundits trying to pick this thing apart, and it was almost comical last night on the cable channels because all the lawyers, all the pundits, all the commentators, even the guys and the women who were lawyers were saying, they're all in disagreement, and all in disagreement for different reasons. This tells me that this is really a mess and a very, very complicated situation. And what you're seeing and hearing may not be exactly what is going on. Some of the stuff could be legal maneuvers and strategery and things like that. But, you know, everybody becomes an expert now. Everybody becomes an expert. And just because something exists in our lives, and we can say, you know, A plus B equals C, it doesn't mean that in a courtroom. But I'll say this, you know, I was watching the Three Stooges with my 13-year-old the other night, and it was so funny, and she was laughing so hard, and you're just sort of sitting there, and I've had this moment with all three of my daughters where you turn them on to the Three Stooges for the first time, and they can't believe what they're seeing, all right? You can't even believe it. But in the Three Stooges movies, or in any movie or stage production, like, you know, for example, if somebody gets hit over the head with a glass bottle, it's not really glass, all right? It's a prop. Or when Moe used to take the saw and run it over the top of Curly's head, and it would ruin the saw. Or when they would take a crowbar and bend it over the top of Shemp's head or something. And we knew all of those things were props, and a lot of times on the TV shows, there were TV shows, local shows all over the country where they would show Three Stooges movies, and the host of the show would always, you know, remind the kids that these are actors, these are movies, and when somebody gets hit with a crowbar, it's not a real crowbar. We all understand that. Also, when we were kids, and I'm talking about, you know, small kids, you know, before we hit even 10 years old, we were playing cops and robbers and cowboys and Indians all the time. And the parents didn't really worry about anything. Sure, you've got a gun and you got a bow and arrow, but it's got rubber tips on it. But nobody's parent worried about playing cops and robbers. It's like they're fake guns. Don't worry. There's nothing to worry about. That should have been the situation with this movie that Alec Baldwin was making. Whoever brought live ammunition onto the set of a movie, that's the one they should be focused on. And in fact, the woman who was there's a name for that, I forget what it is, but it's the person who's in charge of all the guns on a movie set and explosives and things like that. And she was the one that apparently somehow brought live ammo onto a movie set. And that's the thing that you'd think they'd be focusing on. But, you know, like I said, I'm not a lawyer. I don't even know how this whole thing happened yesterday. I'm just scratching my head, looking at it, going, I'm sorry, I don't get it. And then the other big story yesterday was the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, they spent a lot of money and a lot of time looking for whoever leaked that story about what at the time was the upcoming overturning of Roe versus Wade. And they went around and they interviewed they interrogated everybody, and, you know, a couple of hundred people, I guess, and they came back yesterday and just said, we don't know who did it. So that tells me a couple of things. Either it was a shitty investigation, or whoever did it really, really covered their tracks well, whether it was an intern or an assistant or just somebody who worked at the law firm that handles work for the Supreme Court, or... And I haven't heard anybody mention this. Could it be one of the justices? Because I don't think the investigators interviewed any of them. Well, they did talk to Brett Kavanaugh, and they said, okay, well, we concluded the investigation. Now what do we do? And he just said, kegger! Good morning, everybody! Seth Meyers was a riot last night.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis criticized the NHL last week for plans to hold a hiring event aimed at diversifying the league's workforce. Imagine how racist you have to be to think that hockey isn't white enough. The Senate Judiciary Committee has announced that it will hold a hearing next week on Ticketmaster's mishandling of Taylor Swift's ticket sales, and even that's sold out.
All right, that's a great joke. That is a great joke right there. All right, Beyonce reportedly making $24 million for a show in Dubai this weekend. It's an invitation-only show at a resort in Dubai, and she's the only one playing for an hour, and she hauls down $24 million. We got football out the wazoo. Here we go. If you have a non-football lover in your family, I'm sure their reaction is going to be, there's four games again? Yep. Jacksonville at Kansas City. Chiefs are 8.5-point favorites. Giants at Philadelphia, 8:15. They'll probably be raining during that game. Eagles are favored by 7.5. Then you got the big one. That is 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, and that is Cincinnati at Buffalo. The Bills are favored by 4. By the way, I wanted to see the updated forecast. Where did I put that? Earlier in the week, they were mentioning a potential winter storm. Well, now this is why these weather apps stink. Dave Murray talks about it all the time. If you look at these weather apps, they're terrible because even Philadelphia, they were talking about heavy rain for the game. I get up this morning, now I look, and there's not even any rain in the forecast. I mean, I can understand if they're one, you know, on Wednesday, they say heavy rain on Saturday, and then on Friday morning, you're looking and go, okay, showers. But now there's not even any rain at all for the Philadelphia game against the Giants. All right, let's go to Orchard Park, New York, where it is snowing right now. The game is at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, and it says snow developing during the afternoon, less than an inch. Sunday evening and Sunday night, accumulation about an inch, snow showers, low 30. All right, so it'll be pretty, and who knows, maybe enough to cover the field. I love watching football games when it is just, you can't even see the field. I love that stuff. Aubrey Plaza hosting Saturday Night Live. Jimmy Fallon's got Colin Jost. Everybody else is off for the weekend. Sherry Shepherd says she and Barbara Walters could talk about sex all day. I'm not sure I wanted to know that. Remember, this is maybe about 10 years ago, Paris Hilton running around all over the place going, that's hot, that's hot. And then she was like, yeah, I invented that. I invented it's hot. It turns out the word hot became a synonym for popular or in demand around 1909. In the 1920s, its meaning was extended to include sexual desirability. Birthdays this weekend. Bill Maher back on HBO tonight. He's got Bill Barr, former attorney general under Donald Trump. That'll be interesting. He's 67 today. Rainn Wilson from The Office, 57. Melissa Rivers, 55. Paul Stanley of Kiss, 71. David Lynch, very bizarre director of Twin Peaks, Elephant Man, Eraserhead, Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive, 77. Buzz Aldrin, second man on the moon, and a giant dick. And I don't mean what you think I mean. He's a dick. He is a 93. Birthdays for Saturday, Baby Spice, 47. Gina Davis, 67. Robbie Benson, wow, 67. Still considered a celebrity. Joel Eikenberry from L.A. Law, 76. Jack Nicklaus, 83. Birthdays on Sunday include Guy Fieri, 55. Diane Lane, awesome, 58. Linda Blair from The Exorcist, 64. And Steve Perry from Journey, 74.
You guys did the album this time without Neil Young. Graham, the last time you were in St. Louis, you told me that it was kind of an interesting experience doing the album up in Neil's barn with the, I believe you said, the pigs and the goats and the emus.
Yeah, we missed the llamas. We did miss the llamas this time. But
we did not miss the peacocks that went, meow,
meow.
He's trained his peacocks to go, meow. Strange. We're just wanting to make a Crosby, Stills, and Nash record. It's a very different chemical mix. It's a very different harmonic structure when we're not with Neil. We enjoy working with Neil tremendously, and we're glad that we didn't.
Ba-dum-bum. David, everybody seems to be talking about the band's kind of uplifted spirit, I believe the words were. And we've got some synthesizers going, and I've heard somebody say, I think it was Graham, say we want to bring the band into the 90s. We're not going to see any pyrotechnics on stage in St. Louis in August, are we?
No, but I have a lovely dress and some stack heels. And no, we've never been too much into, you know, theatrics. We have gone for considerably better lighting and some more interesting production this time than we have done in the past, but it's not smoke bombs and glitter. Our main concern is still to sing you a song that matters to you and makes you feel something. I'm sure that will remain our main aim.
There are some legendary stories about Stephen and David fighting, and not just over music. Can you tell me maybe like one of the last things you guys had a disagreement about?
No, but I'll tell you something about why that is. When we first got together and were thrown into this crucible of celebrity all at once at the ripe old age of 23, it's a horrifying experience. So we really didn't have anything but each other. So we became brothers. We became family. And just like real brothers and real family, we fight. We are petty with each other, and so on and so forth. It's just like anybody else, a very, very vibrant, alive family. And today we've grown, seem to have matured out of that a little bit and have a lot more fun with each other and are more forgiving of each other. And the result is some really fine music.
We can go up and down the line here. Everybody has a favorite Crosby, Stills, and Nash song, and oftentimes they are the hits. And it's interesting, though, because when I talk to the actual artists themselves, it's always something kind of off the beaten path. David, let's start with you. Maybe one song down through the years that is closest to your heart among all.
That'd be really tough. I think maybe Critical Mass, the a cappella piece that we put on the front of the Wind on the Water,
To the Last Whale, right?
Yeah.
Stephen, how about you?
You've stumped me. Right now, my favorite song is David's song, yours and mine. It's the finest piece of work that I've been anywhere near.
Graham, how about you?
I really enjoyed writing Meet Me in St. Louis.
Can't get a serious
White Christmas was good, too. I thought I hit it right on the head with that one.
Stephen, you have friends down in Southern Illinois, just on the other side of the river.
I sure do. Over around Lake Carlisle, that's as close as I'll tell you. Leave them alone. They're just common folk. Doug is some kind of, gets a little surprised by strange visitors, but they figure it out. Anyway, yes, I do. And a lot of my family is from Southern Illinois, from everywhere from Texaco, Carbondale, Carmine, and over into the other side near Indiana.
Guys, we're very much looking
forward.
We're
pretty much locals.
Very much looking forward to having you back in St. Louis in August. Can't wait. Thanks very much, and good luck to you.
All right, thank you, JC.
There are places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better. Some have gone, and some remain. All these places have their moments. With lovers and friends, I still can recall. Some are dead and some are living. In my life, I've loved them. No, I'll never ever lose affection
for people and things that went before.
And I know I'll often stop and think about them. In my life, I've loved you.